The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. We also had a new month over the weekend, and now we're rolling into Hanukkah. The donuts are out, and we are definitely ready for Hanukkah. But one of the enduring issues at this time and that we're facing is this issue of the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem. And so much conversation backwards and forwards about whether it would be appropriate to reopen the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem. Just as a reminder, this was a consulate that existed in Jerusalem in the days before the embassy was moved. And then when the embassy was moved, the Trump administration decided to close the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem, which always traditionally really mostly catered for Arab /Palestinian people wanting U.S. consular services. Of course, the consulate that was in Tel Aviv used to deal with most Israelis' visa requests and consular services in general. When the embassy moved to Jerusalem, it was decided to fold this consulate into the embassy. Now, President Joe Biden has said he would like to reopen the consulate, and it is apparently being reopened in order to cater to Palestinian needs. And of course, the Palestinian Authority is very much supporting this idea. This, they feel, would entrench their hold on having Jerusalem as the potential capital of a Palestinian state. The irony, of course, is that the Palestinian Authority claim East Jerusalem as the potential capital of a Palestinian state. This particular consulate is very firmly located in West Jerusalem. There can be little doubt about that. I'm not therefore sure how the two really tie up, but it is definitely a political hot potato. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has come out very clearly as recently as Saturday saying there is no room in Jerusalem for another American mission. And this apparently is in contradiction with President Joe Biden's claim that he has pledged to reopen the consulate. But this is clearly a little bit of a thorn in the side of relations between the U.S. and Israel.
Would it be so bad if there was, I mean, I know I'll get lynched from listeners, but let's just go there for a second.
You lynched? Get out of here.
All right. I might get some harshly worded messages. Just go with me here, guys. Let's just go there. Would it be so bad if there was a Palestinian consulate in Jerusalem?
I don't think that there's any harm in offering consular services to different people using different facilities. And if they had to say, you know, we're going to open up this consulate in a different location in Jerusalem, and it will be used to serve anybody who needs consular services in Israel or in Jerusalem or in the Palestinian Authority area or whoever turns up at the door, I think it would be a little bit of a different statement than saying this particular location is dedicated to only serving Palestinian Authority residents. I think there is a slight difference, and certainly the Palestinian Authority puts a great deal of emphasis on the fact that if it was dedicated to their population, it is almost like having an embassy in their capital.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I'd love your thoughts. 345-19 or 061-895-1019. That's how you let me have your thoughts. The big story, of course, was that Israel's first budget in 4 years was passed at the end of last week. Well, there's a relief, so we didn't need to go back to elections there.
Huge relief. I mean, let's not underestimate the significance of that relief, because the budget traditionally in Israel has always been the moment of truth for any government. Generally speaking, when a new government takes office, they have a certain period of time within which they're obliged to pass a budget. And the negotiations that surround the budget epitomize everything that is really terrible about Israeli politics, the bargaining and the trading backwards and forwards and the insults that are sent backwards and forwards. But the truth of the matter is that the budget is an opportunity for the government to really put down their policy and to lay down the not only the policy in traditional policy terms, but actually to put your money where your mouth is. Because what they need to then do is allocate money in order to put those policies in place. And given that Israel has been operating on this kind of rolling budget basis for the last 4 years, this was a real line in the sand, a real moment in time for the government to allow things to be released a little bit. First of all, a budget, of course, is required not only to show the government's policies, but just in order to allow good governance. Certain infrastructure projects needed money to be approved. Certain jobs needed to have money approved, budget to be approved, all of which was hanging in the balance, was in abeyance while there was no budget approved. So this was really a very, very big moment. And I think, to be fair, that Naftali Bennett's government alongside Yair Lapid, because let's not underestimate the influence that Yair Lapid brings to this government, even though he's not sitting in the swivelly chair right now, but he certainly brings a lot of influence to the government. I think that the government really came of age when that budget was passed, because there were lots and lots of speculations about whether they would succeed in passing the budget. And the 61-59 majority really underlies, really hides away, the strength with which the budget was passed. It seems like it was on a razor edge. It seems like it was very, very close, just because there was only that two vote difference. But I think the reality was that this budget passed quite comfortably when all things were considered. And this was the government's chance to really say, this is what we believe in, this is what where we're going to put our money. And now we are releasing the wheels of government to be able to flow in a usual way, with money being allocated where it needs to go in terms of being able to build our country and to allow all the machinations of government to operate freely. So I think this was a massive moment. And I know you mentioned, Howard, that you felt that Naftali Bennett was really holding his own on the international stage. This, I think, is a sign of him holding his own on the local stage, because this was a big moment for him.
Absolutely so. We started speaking about this story, or I started speaking about it with listeners earlier, quite concerning that the Mossad is reported to have thwarted an Iranian attack on Jews and Israelis in Africa. Tell us about the story.
Well, what we know is very little, other than the fact that apparently these attacks had been planned by Iranian members of the Iranian Quds Force, which is a wing of the Revolutionary Guard. Apparently, people were arrested in Africa. They were carrying African passports, and they had planned to carry out attacks, which apparently were located or were focused in the area of Tanzania and Senegal and Ghana in the most part. And apparently the attacks were going to be directed either against Jewish or Israeli businessmen in those particular locations, or potentially against tourists, particularly those coming on safari. And as we understand things, these individuals from the Iranian Quds Force had been in Lebanon doing some training ahead of carrying out their mission. They'd then been given African passports. They were posing as religious students and come back to Africa with the goal of trying to identify vulnerable Jewish and Israeli targets. The Mossad is always very much on the case. Finally managed to have these individuals arrested by local forces before they could carry out any attacks. So, you know, the idea that the Mossad can reach anywhere was properly confirmed in this particular story, if we believe all that we hear about. I certainly believe a large part of it. I also believe that there is a lot more that we don't know about that hasn't been released for publication, hasn't been released at all. But I think that this is just an indication that Iran will be carrying out revenge, or will be claiming to carry out revenge against these various attacks by Israel. And they're not going to rest until such time as they achieve it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is a concern, and something that no doubt we'll be hearing more about. An Israeli supermarket ran a secret parallel website with cheaper prices. I started seeing rumblings around the story, but I wasn't sure if it's true. Tell me about it.
So this is a story that has been exposed by an Israeli TV show. and it accuses the Israeli supercell supermarket chain of running an online site that is effectively targeted towards Haredi shoppers. And the way that we have managed to find that out is because the goods and services, the products that are carried on this parallel website are all Mahadrin products, which many of which are also carried on the regular website and in the regular supermarkets. But on this particular website, it's only kosher Mahadrin products. And when prices were compared on these Mahadrin products between the regular online site and this particular focused site, a parallel site, it was found that in the most part, many of the items were quite significantly cheaper. The other point about this parallel site is that it doesn't do deliveries to certain major cities in Israel, which include Haifa and Rishon LeZion and Ramat Gan and Ashkelon. So therefore, people have interpreted that to mean that they don't deliver to areas where there aren't significant population groups of Haredi living in those areas. So this, it looks like, on by all accounts, to be a website, a parallel website that is focused really towards those who live in certain population areas and who will only buy products that are kosher Mahadrin. There were quite a number of examples that were raised, some products as much as 50% cheaper than on the regular website or in the regular supermarkets. Of course, a whole host of class actions having been already filed against the company in response to this, claiming discrimination based on sector, and that the price differences apparently were something that might have been coordinated with leaders in the Haredi community. Already I think two or three class actions having been filed against Supercell because of this. They in turn have said that they will close their website down, but not right now. They're going to take another week or two in order to close this parallel website down. And it's just concerning that there should be this kind of discrimination, and also concerning that perhaps certain groups within Israel have such significant force, have such significant influence that they can convince a huge supermarket chain like Supercell, which has got a branch almost in every town and city in Israel, to run this website, which is focused towards a particular population group. I don't know what listeners think about this, but I was pretty horrified to read and to hear about this information.
Wow. What was the reaction? It must have been people must have been quite horrified.
People are pretty horrified. I mean, let's be clear that it's not the case that the Mahadrin products would only be bought by Haredis. That's not the case at all. As listeners may know, all products within Israel's supermarkets are officially kosher. They of course have different kashrut labels attached to them, some of which wouldn't be acceptable to certain ultra-Orthodox groups. It would be considered to be too lenient. So the Mahadrin kosher stamp, of course, is acceptable to the ultra-Orthodox groups, but it doesn't mean that secular Israelis wouldn't buy it. They do. They just walk into the supermarket. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily care about what kashrut label is on the product. They would pick it up from the shelf and buy it because it is a pizza or it's a piece of meat or because of whatever it is, no matter what the kashrut symbol is. So those items would clearly be bought by anybody, not only by a certain sector of the population, which may be different than outside of Israel, where there's a different variety available, including non-kosher products, which people buy. But here, everything in the supermarket has to be kosher. And of course, some have the Mahadrin label attached to them.
Yeah, it's a very disturbing story for me because there's so much subtext to this, and there's so much that isn't said around the story.
Agreed. There are too many questions as to why this was done, how it was arranged, who was influencing who, what was the quid pro quo that went on, because one would imagine that a chain like Supercell wouldn't voluntarily simply offer their products for cheaper when they can potentially get more for it. There's just something that doesn't make sense here.
Mm, absolutely. It's a very, very worrying. An Israeli swimmer has won gold in the European Short Course Championships. Who is the gold medalist?
So this is Anastasia Gorbenko. We've heard her name before. She also had a very commendable achievement at the recent Olympic Games. Now she has become a gold medalist, which is a really fantastic news for Israel and for Israeli swimming in general. She won gold in the 200-meter individual medley, and she's only 18 years old, so I think she's still got a good way ahead of her. Of course, the short course swimming is held in a 25-meter pool as opposed to the regular Olympic-size 50-meter pool, and it's a thing. It's kind of a different competition because the lengths are shorter. There are different skills associated with swimming in a shorter pool as opposed to a longer pool, and obviously this suited Anastasia very well, so she's managed to achieve that. And the interesting thing, of course, is that the championships are being held in Kazan, which is in Russia at the moment, and of course, as her name suggests, she also hails from the former Soviet Union. So very, very interesting and a great achievement for Israeli swimming. I just feel that Israeli swimming is strengthening as time goes on. We know that we've got some of the best judoka around the world, and they really do really well. But I think our swimmers are also strengthening as time goes on. A lot of time and effort has been put into developing Israeli swimming with Olympic pools that have been set up and training centers to try to improve technique and to try and get our Israeli swimmers up to international standards. And we're delighted with this achievement by Anastasia.
Indeed, Anthony Reich. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. That was Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. It's just gone 8.